Tonight on Arena, actor Franz Zarkowski on his new movie Disco Boy, and Niamh Berry plays songs from her new album live in studio. +51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. We start this evening with TV reviews. A Gentleman in Moscow is an upcoming series from Paramount Plus. It is based on the 2016 novel of the same name from Amor Towles. The series stars Ewan McGregor as Russian aristocrat Count Alexander Rostov, who was spared from death and placed on house arrest at the very swanky Metropole Hotel in Moscow while the 1917 Bolshevik Revolution plays out before his eyes. Next up, another historical series of a kind, as in it's a bit of fantasy in here too, set in the 18th century England, in fact, Renegade Nell, a Disney Plus series where Sally Wainwright gives Derry girl, former Derry girl Louisa Harland, a chance to play a highwayman, or should that be a highwaywoman, called Nell Jackson. And finally, yet another Derry girl, Nicola Coughlan, stars in Big Mood, an upcoming 6-part Channel 4 comedy series. Nicola plays the lead, Maggie, and Lydia West is her best friend, Eddie. It follows the women through a series of chaotic events, putting their friendship to the test, with Maggie's bipolar disorder making an unwelcome return. Eddie questions whether the friendship is in fact in their best interests. With me in studio this evening, Chris Wasser and Jen Gannon. And we'll start with a gentleman in Moscow. Chris, I believe that this was supposed to be Kenneth Branagh in the lead role here, but it is in fact Ewan McGregor. So his moustache won, it would seem. Yeah. Ewan McGregor's.
I was thinking maybe that the people in charge here might have thought audiences will only be confused by which moustachio Kenneth Branagh we're getting here. You know, they know him now as Poirot. Let's not make him the Gentleman in Moscow. And Tom Harper was supposed to direct, but these things usually change, and they did, and Ewan McGregor landed the part. And there'll be added interest too, because there is a famous actress in the story, the original novel by Amor Towles. And in this series, her role has been expanded, and she's played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who worked at Ewan McGregor on Fargo, and they subsequently married. So that, you know, married couple working together always generates headlines. I haven't read the novel from which this is based, but it's easy enough to, you know, get into the story. It's a little bit, you know, if you need to know a little bit about, you know, your Russian political history here. But it's basically following this aristocrat. His name is Count Alexander Rostov, played by McGregor. He grew up in Russia, left for Paris at one stage, and he returns to his homeland following the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917, the beginning of the October Revolution, and he is seen as something of a social parasite. And he has his trial in front of senior Bolsheviks, but it's a revolutionary poem that he believes that his name has been attributed to that gets him out of being imprisoned or shot.
He thinks that he's going to be sentenced to death, but other events ensue, as we will hear in this clip that I'm about to play, where Count Alexander Rostov, Ewan McGregor, he's been placed under house arrest, and Osip Glebnikov is the character here, played by Johnny Harris, shows him to his rooms, which are former servants' quarters in the attic of the Hotel Metropole in Moscow.
What is this place?
Before the revolution, these rooms were for the servants of the hotel guests.
Well, it has a window at least. I'll just about fit on this bed. G-sharp, I believe. Yes, this will do very nicely, thank you.
Your diminished circumstances won't allow you to keep all of your possessions. But I will allow you to take a few personal items.
And the rest?
Becomes the property of the people. I should add, we've liberated your currency from the hotel safe. Food and board will be provided. Life for you and your kind is over in Moscow. You must never leave this hotel. If you do, I'll be waiting.
Apologies. I never thought to ask your name.
My name is not your concern.
Well, thank you. You have carried out your duties with the greatest courtesy available to you.
There we go. Ewan McGregor as Count Alexander Rostov being shown to his quarters, which has a window, a mattress in G-sharp, and a lot of drafts coming through that window, it would seem, as well, if we're to judge by the wind there. What struck me most from that clip and in the little bits of the series that I've seen, Jen, is Ewan McGregor certainly is in a Russian comedy set around the time of the Bolshevik Revolution. Johnny Harris is in serious mode there, saying, you know, life for you and your kind is not going to be the same in Moscow anymore. Is the revolution treated with a comic touch here, or do we get into any of the politics and history of it?
We do and we don't. I mean, the town is all over the place for me. Like, Rostov is only to be able to witness the changes in Russian society and Russian politics through the comings and goings of the guests and the relationships he builds with the staff and the visitors. And that makes it a very curious show, because you're barely seeing any of the reality of the ordinary people's lives outside of the hotel. And, you know, people might point to Jonathan Glazer's The Zone of Interest going, well, that's pretty much the same premise, but they're very, very different proposals.
Different tone here, yeah.
Because The Gentleman in Moscow really is all over the place. And in the initial episodes, it comes off like this BBC chocolate box kind of Christmas time drama with McGregor. He's this debonair aristocrat who's teaching a young guest all the deportment that a princess would have, and they get up to kind of mischief in the hotel. They're finding secret rooms, and he's creating this makeshift space to make it more pleasant for himself, including this painting of his sister and its very troubled past. And it's all very cozy and bizarrely festive, and I think that tone kind of comes into it because, I mean, the showrunner is Ben Vanstone, and that's no surprise because he's in charge of All Creatures Great and Small, that reboot of that. But for me, it really, like, there's almost like a guest of the week you have with the actress, with Johnny Harris's character. With Johnny Harris's character, he's a secret policeman, and Ewan McGregor's character is trying to teach him better manners so he can spy on people better. And those kind of things are wrapped up pretty quickly, but the reality outside only slowly starts to drip in these small kind of Kafkaesque nightmares that amount to something more sinister but never truly break through. It's almost like the Grand Budapest Hotel, Wes Anderson's, going to say, in a way.
It has a touch of that about it, and McGregor isn't in charge of the hotel, and there's no bellboy here, as it were. But there is a young girl who is kind of McGregor's sidekick. She's the daughter of one of the guests in the hotel, and he seems to see and observe a lot of things happening through her eyes as well.
He does, and we get the feeling that she might be narrating from the future, because this is a story that's going to be told over decades. I mean, the first episode alone covers the first year that he's up there in the attic. But he does have a lovely friendship with Nina, and as Jen was saying, he kind of teaches her how a princess lives. We also have an old college friend who is now a socialist coming back into his life. They fell out over the years. We don't really know why, but we have these hazy flashbacks that might explain that. We have another prince that comes in, but he's actually sort of imprisoned in the hotel too, working as a musician. We have his plan about how he's going to break the both of them out, and they'll walk 200 miles to their freedom. There is, basically what I'm saying is, there is an awful lot going on.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really know what it wants to be. Now, I think, like Alexander in the hotel, he eventually, you know, Stockholm Syndrome kicks in, he eventually starts to enjoy his stay. You watch enough of this, you start to actually enjoy it. But it is kind of torn between wanting to be something that's very playful, sumptuous, nice to look at, you know, funny, and also a deadly serious drama about what was happening in Russia at the time. Unfortunately, it doesn't really kind of, it never really
is it either?
No, it's kind of, it's torn between the two.
Briefly then, what happens when Anna Urbanova, which even the name kind of seems as if it's, there's a comic turn within there somewhere, this is Mary Elizabeth Winstead, his Ewan McGregor's wife, she comes in, very flamboyant actress.
Yeah, and you know, that's played for a comic turn, but at the same time, you can kind of see how she's trying to scrabble around for a living as it goes on under Stalin's rule. So you're going from, you know, Lenin to Stalin, and how much pressure she's under to perform, and what it kind of becomes then to live under those conditions. But I found that without some kind of engagement with the workers within the hotel, they're just a blank slate, and they're kind of two-dimensional characters, where ironically the upper classes are given this rich interior life. And I found that, you know, it's almost amusing to me that the Bolsheviks are depicted as these cruel authoritarians, but the aristocracy, their negativities are brushed aside because Ewan McGregor's character has to come across as a likable, whimsical character, and that struck a real wrong note for me.
And can we, you know, like, if you look at Catherine the Great, or indeed Death of Stalin, which had that satirical and slightly comic but kind of dark comical look at the history of Russia, does it compare with those at all?
It doesn't go far enough, I think. think there are some moments where you are taken aback a bit and you do realise the depth of the situation, but a lot of it lands lightly, too lightly for me.
Stars?
I'd give it a 2.5.
2.5.
I liked McGregor here, but I think I've gotten very used to him being just fine and never amazing. And that's kind of what this series is. But I will keep with it for a little while because, as I said, the story spans decades. So I am interested to see how it ends up.
How it goes.
But it's a cautious 3 stars, I think.
A cautious 3 stars. Okay, let's move on then to Renegade Nell on Disney Plus. Historical fantasy series written by Sally Wainwright, set in 18th century England. Derry Girls actor Louisa Harland as Nell Jackson, a young widow forced into the life of a highway robber, battling mysterious powers both within her enemies and herself, is how it is billed. it's brilliant to see her getting this Disney Plus and fronting this Disney Plus series, Louisa Harland.
Yeah, and I think she's absolutely terrific in this, and I really love the fact that this is definitely a Sally Wainwright take.
A touch of the Dick Turpins in it, isn't it?
Yes,
there?
I mean, we just had Noel Fielding a couple of weeks ago as Dick Turpin, but this is also very, very different. This is a strong female-led dramedy, and she is this feisty young widow, and she returns basically from the dead almost to her family, and they're embroiled in this violent feud with local aristocrats, and it sees her framed for murder, and she's on the run with her younger sisters and forced to become this highwaywoman to survive. And I think with Sally Wainwright, from Happy Valley to Gentleman Jack to even her take on the Bronte sister stories in To Walk Invisible, she really is a master at depicting the distillation of female rage.
Yeah.
And this is no different. I think even for younger viewers, I don't think that's been dialed down, and I love the fact that Nell Jackson, she's a woman literally fighting against the patriarchy in this unjust society, and she battles furiously against any opposition that stands in the way in the bid to protect her sisters. But she does this with this fantastical element. But it is there, the threat of, her sisters being married away to these awful men or toiling in the workhouse is always there behind them.
The Trotters then, when we talk about George Trotter and Roxy Trotter, played by Florence Keane and Beau Braggison, who are we talking about there? Are they the sisters?
Yeah, we're talking about Nell's sisters. Yeah, Nell ends up framed for a murder she definitely did not commit, and as a result they lose their home, and then they end up on the run and she becomes a highwaywoman. I do think it's funny you kind of wait for ages for one highwayman series to come along and two pop up at once, but unlike the completely made up Avengers of Dick Turpin, which kind of took the goofier comedic approach, this is going for fantasy, and that for me is where I had a little bit of a problem, because there is an excellent story here. I loved the character of Nell. For a while, I didn't actually know anything about this series before, and I thought for a while it was actually based on a YA series of novels. It kind of plays out like that, but no, it's a new creation by Sally Wainwright.
Well, and I'll come back to the fantasy thing in a moment, because I think that it kind of is in a different vein, but I want to get a sense of that kind of dynamic that's there with her as Nell Jackson, Louisa Harland, and here she is with the two sisters, George Trotter played by Florence Keane, Roxy Trotter played by Beau Braggison, and the rogue Charles Devereaux played by Frank Dillane have just hijacked the carriage with the three women in it. He should have thought better, methinks.
I know you.
You do? So why not go pester someone else before I part your hair for you like I did the last time?
And who are these two beauties?
It's that fella, Nelly. Hmm? It's that posh fella from London.
What's that poor little mite trying to say?
It's us, Mr. Devereaux. Why are you dressed up so cunningly like an highway man?
What she's trying to say is, I met this fella the other day in London, who you'll never believe, has a remarkable resemblance to you. Anyone with eyes might think he was twins. And he even had a scar, which I could have swore blind I'd given you, him, myself. Hmm. Curious.
How came you by this handsome carriage and these four horses?
I was obliged to borrow them.
Do you know what I think? I think you're Nelly Jackson.
I think he's right. That's Louisa. That's with the last voice you heard. There was Frank Dillane and Louisa Harland as Nell Jackson, Florence Keane and Beau Braggison also in the midst of that scene. She's on fire there for sure, and it seems as if she is in the series. But I stopped you when you wanted to touch on the fantasy side of it. But that's a kind of a... That story sounds great to me. The fantasy side goes somewhere else then.
It does. It gets in the way. And Louisa Harland, she is terrific here. And it is great because successful sitcoms like Derry Girls, successful sitcoms usually overshadow an actor's career. And it's not, unusual for the stars of a successful sitcom to never be in anything good again.
Yeah.
And Louisa Harland has just proven that wrong. Nicola Coughlan has proven it wrong, as we'll talk about later. But there's such a lovely story here. Soldier returning from war, family struggling to accept her. When they do, a tragedy strikes. The character wanting to become a highwaywoman and get revenge and look after her sisters. But every now and then you have this little sprite character, played by Nick Mohammed,
yeah,
who just flies into view and, like Tinkerbell from Peter Pan, and sits on her shoulder and goes into her ear, goes into her mouth, and gives her these superpowers like an 18th century Wonder Woman. And it's just all a little bit too silly. And there's such a brilliant historical drama playing out, and all of the supernatural and fantasy stuff, because there's a villain, there's demons in there, there's someone who hatches a plan to bring down the Queen of England. It's all just very silly, and it felt like something from a different show.
Did it go a step too far for you,
Jen?
I did,
Jen? A bit, but I think we have to take the audience into account, because I did wonder what it would look like without those supernatural elements, and it kind of reminded me of Shane Meadows' take on The Gallows Pole that came out last year, which I absolutely loved, which was about a working class community, you know, coming together to try to fight off like the domination of the ruling classes, which this is very similar to. But then again, I don't know if it would have the broad appeal that it needs to. This is going for children 12 plus. But then I do wonder, because Sally Wainwright has this way of plotting and pacing, that she pulls the rug out from under you sometimes, and so it can be shocking. There are moments in there where are brutal and shocking, and I do wonder, will the younger audience be robust enough for those little parts of it as well? But I do admire it. I think, you know, Louisa Harland plays Nell with this relentless resolve, and she's an easy heroine to fall in love with. She has this boundless energy that kind of bursts off screen, but also this pure grit and moxie, and it really powers the story along.
Would you think people should stick with it and stars?
I have stuck with it. I will stick with it to the very end, and I think, you know, without the Jiminy Cricket kind of Nick Mohammed character, I think we can get over that. I think it's a top notch adventure story for young girls and for young kids anyway, and I would give it a 3.5 out of 5.
A good solid 3.5. Sounds like you want season 2, never mind the end of season 1. What are you saying, Chris?
I think he's a great original character in there. It's a great turn for Louisa Harland. So again, I'll go with 3 stars. I just kept thinking it probably would have made for a great film, but there's just too many ideas and too many different tones in there that just didn't work for me.
All right. Let us move on then. Another of the Derry girls. Now, she's proven that you can outlive a sitcom already, has Nicola Coughlan, obviously, in Bridgerton. But here she is now in Big Mood, upcoming 6-part Channel 4 comedy series starring Nicola Coughlan as the lead character of Maggie, whose bipolar disorder is making an unwelcome return. Lydia West stars as her best friend, Eddie. Again, we're in an interesting place here. Bipolar disorder obviously isn't a funny issue in and of itself, but they're going the comic route with that. Does that work, Jen? What's the story they're telling?
It's not a MacGuffin. Like, it's not, like, they're not using mental health as a MacGuffin at all. I think, you know, the writer Camilla Whitehill has had her own struggles, and you can see that Nicola Coughlan's character Maggie is based on her, because she is a playwright, a struggling playwright. And I think in the way that Lena Dunham's Girls introduced Hannah, the main characters, her OCD coming into play, coming back, is the kind of way that we're dealing with it here. I mean, there is funny situations that Maggie gets herself in, but at the same time, there is a layer of, you know, seriousness and in-depth thought to this. I mean, Maggie is the chaotic fulcrum of the show, and she drags Eddie into these several very messy dramas, and that may sound like your typical friendship sitcom with, you know, the messy millennial woman from, like, you know, chaotically destructive women from Girls to, like, Fleabag even, but it does dig deeper. I think there are these self-centred tropes that are on display that are part of a mental illness that it's trying to break open and make accessible for a lot of, you know, a broader audience to understand. And it's very different territory. And I think it's a big leap for Nicola Coughlan, and it shows off her range as an actress. And I think Maggie's mental health issues, it's the naughtier side of life. It's not just, you know, you're falling out of bars, you know, in your late 20s, early 30s, wondering what to do with your life. You also see the deep struggles that she's in. And I think...
And what's lovely in that regard, sorry to interrupt, Jen, what's lovely in that regard, I think, Chris, is that we therefore get, it's about the dynamic between her and the character of Lydia, of character of Eddie played by Lydia West.
Yeah.
What is that? How is that dynamic realised between the two of them? Because you can have the friend who loves their friend, but understandably becomes exasperated by times.
Yeah, it's all about Eddie looking after Maggie at the beginning, and you kind of do get that sense. We've seen it with so many on-screen friendships before where it's only a matter of time before Eddie's going to turn around and say, I need looking after too. I need you to be there for me. But it's not, I don't think it would have been good enough for Camilla Whitehill to hire a couple of, you know, gifted comedic actresses for a comedy series. You need someone who can work with some good dramatic material too. And this is, as Jen said, a chance for Nicola Coughlan to show her dramatic chops, and she does brilliantly here. And And Lydia West was so good in Years and Years, and It's a Sin. And they have this lovely lived-in chemistry between them. You know, you kind of get the feeling that this thing was workshopped before it went to screen. So they work very well together. I think I found it scarily relatable because, as Jen says again, it's about, you know, the messiness of your 30s when, you know, the 20s is now in the distance and now it's not good enough to be kind of messing around still. So there are a lot of relatable scenarios, a lot of relatable characters. And it does approach some extraordinarily sensitive material with delicacy and with charm, and you know, you can you can have fun with that material, but it does it in a very it's quite respectful the way it's
let's listen to a clip where between Maggie played by Nicola Coughlan and Eddie played by Lydia West, Maggie has given away her scooter and she calls into Eddie in her bar. She has a bar, she works in a bar, doesn't she? Eddie, and there's going to be a bit of old school talking to given here.
Hi! Whose scooter is that, Maggie?
Mine. I bought it after watching a particularly persuasive TikTok ad.
And you've just given it away?
Honestly, Eddie, I just saw myself on it reflected in a shop window. It was a rude awakening. It had to go.
Oh, shit. Question 8. Which day of the week is the worst?
I was going to say, we hate scooter people. I know, but, like, the environment.
You don't care about the environment. You said all humans deserve to burn to death.
Yeah, but I only said that because I just had that really weird haircut.
You seem better.
Yeah, I'm having the best week. I went to a spin class yesterday.
What?
I mean, I left 10 minutes in because the instructor kept playing Ed Sheeran dance remixes, but, like, the intention was there. Anyways, I need you to take tomorrow off work.
Oh, I can't. I've got too much going on here.
Look, it's important. My old school want me to come back and do a talk for their little drama club. Isn't that cute? They must have read the reviews on my play.
The 2-star reviews.
The state of the education system in this country is dire. They need me.
Nicola Coughlan there as Maggie and Lydia West as Eddie. There is a lovely balance there between, it's just on the right edge of comedy, but you're kind of worried for her as well, even as she's speaking.
You are, and I think that's why it is so good, because it goes to those places where, you know, comedy maybe doesn't normally. And I think when you see shows like Fleabag or you see a show like I May Destroy You, you can see that there are no limits to genre. Like, there really isn't. And I hope that with Big Mood, it will follow that lead, because audiences are willing to go to those places. They want, they don't want something that's too formulaic anymore, especially when it comes to something like comedy. They're willing to be challenged and they're willing to go there. And I think with such a sensitive subject like this, they really do a good job in trying to explain it from all sides, but in a way that is hilarious, because sometimes those situations can be funny and black humour. I mean,
all right, we're previewing here rather than reviewing in the case of Channel 4 series. So you're definitely going to watch till the end, or have you already done?
Definitely, I've done a little bit more than I probably should have, but I do think it will be something great for Nicola Coughlan.
Okay,
deserved.
Great. Well, that's brilliant to hear too. And Chris,
yeah, I don't think the team at Channel 4 will mind us saying that this is a very promising start for Nicola Coughlan post Bridges and the Derry Girls, second season, please.
Second season already. You're looking for the second season. Fair enough. And brilliant that we can give such positive notices for both Louisa Harland and Nicola Coughlan. From both of them, congratulations. Chris and Jen with us there this evening. And a reminder that the series, Jen Gannon and Chris Wasser, a reminder of the series we discussed this evening, A Gentleman in Moscow, out on Paramount Plus from this Friday, March the 29th. Renegade Nell, also out on Friday, that's on Disney Plus. Big Mood will be starting on Channel 4. It starts tomorrow, March the 28th. You're listening to Wednesday Night's Arena. In the feature film Disco Boy, we experience the parallel stories of two young men who have taken up arms, but whose true hearts lie elsewhere. First, we meet Alexei, a lonely Belarusian refugee who endures a grueling journey west and joins the French Foreign Legion in an attempt to secure his future in Europe. Then we meet Jomo, a charismatic fighter who is trying to end the exploitation of his homeland in the oil-rich Niger Delta. The intertwining of their lives lies at the heart of this film. This debut feature from Italian filmmaker Giacomo Abruzzese features German star Franz Rogowski in the title role, or in the role of Alexei, and draws on all the nuance and stark physicality that Franz has brought to his work with renowned auteurs like Michael Haneke and Terrence Malick. In recent times, Franz has been filming Bird with Andrea Arnold, co-starring our own Barry Keoghan. And just last year, Franz starred in Ira Sachs's Passages, a film which was on many a top 10 list of 2023. Absolutely delighted to be joined on Arena this evening by Franz Rogowski. This character of yours, Alexei, do you know, when I saw him first on this bus on his way out of Belarus, as we learn, this seemed like a very optimistic young man heading off into a brand new life. It really has a great sense of hope within it. What attracted you to him as a character?
Well, many things. It's true that we see a lighthearted, rather optimistic person in the beginning, but I think one can only see the surface. And, you know, considering that he is willing to leave his family, his friends, his environment, his home, in order to, you know, find wealth or some kind of security in Europe, means quite a lot. I think I wouldn't dare to leave everything behind because, you know, I'm surrounded by comfort. But following those two friends and all their dreams in the beginning is not just a lighthearted adventure trip. It's also a very existential decision that those two are going through.
Absolutely. And that was what struck
me. I think...
Go ahead.
Yes, to a certain extent, that is interesting to an actor, you know, to be somehow in between those different materials. On the one hand, there's European history, there is also French history, the foreign league, there is a crisis between the East and West of Europe that we are also experiencing right now. And there's also the language that is totally foreign to me. I don't speak a word of Russian. So in many ways, this script and the story that Giacomo wanted to tell offered a lot of interesting material for me as an actor.
Yeah, and for sure, you pointed out quite rightly there, Franz, that yes, there is that lighthearted feel, but right from the very start, underneath it, we get a sense that this isn't going to be the very happy tale of two young men make their way to a new country and they get a new life. There are difficulties from the very outset, and I don't want to spoil how that journey starts, particularly for your character of Alexei. But before long, we are in the Foreign Legion, because that is where Alexei brings himself to, in the hope that he can gain his French citizenship by serving in the Legion for 5 years, and then he automatically would get that citizenship. It really struck me, you know, from your back catalogue, the famous dance, of course, in Michael Haneke's Happy End, how physical this performance in the beginning, from the very outset, is, and the sort of tests that the legionnaires, or the young hopeful legionnaires, are put through. There's a huge section, the opening maybe 20 minutes of the film, seemed to me like a series of physical tortures for you and your fellow actors.
Oh, well, it was. Actually, you know, Giacomo can be quite decisive when it comes to achieving what he needs in order to be editing the material that he wants to see on the screen. So in case of, you know, I also don't want to spoil too much, but let's say there's very cold water and the day of shooting was even colder. So imagine a director that wants to do 30, 40 takes and you're in underwear and there's not really, you know, like a warm, let's say, you know, like a room where you could warm up. So I guess in many ways it is very challenging what we've experienced on set, but way less challenging than the fictional story that you experience in this movie.
Absolutely.
And, you know, in terms of physicality, I mean, an actor always wants to get as close as possible to something that is not real, something that is constructed and fictional. And most of us actors, we try to be empathetic. We try to be feeling the feelings that an actor, a character feels. But the truth is, we don't. The truth is, these aren't our lines. These aren't our costumes. This isn't our script. So we are constantly in those feelings of alienation and distortion. And we wonder how to navigate the ship, you know, in these intertwined realities of, you know, protein powder, self-hatred, lines that you have learned, and a fictional character that needs dignity and needs something truthful. So I think physicality is something very important to every space that you want to create.
Absolutely.
Whether it is a text or a dialogue or an historical context. So at least me personally, I'm always looking for something physical in terms of a space that I can experience.
And I think those opening scenes, those early scenes as the Legionnaires are potentially Legionnaires are trained up, I mean, they do involve real hardship, standing in the rain. And from what you're saying, Giacomo Abruzzese, your director, didn't mind if you stood in the rain for as long as it took to get the shot that he needed. But there was another element within that training that I thought was interesting and might feed in to the acting world as much as it feeds into anything else. The officer in charge of these young men at one point talks about, you know, pushing yourself to personal limits, but he says in French, ensemble, toujours ensemble, together, always together. It struck me about that dynamic in any work of art, but particularly in a film or in the acting world, where the actor must be absolutely inside his or her own character, but also must be toujours ensemble, always within the ensemble, always together as well.
Totally. I mean, if everything goes right, a film set and a film crew is like a well-oiled machine where, you know, you have a very specific purpose and a very specific function within this engine. And it's also one of the most liberating and beautiful experiences, because life is so messy and so vast and so complex and overwhelmingly complicated. And then once you're on set and you're an actor and you have, like, let's say 10 lines and a little scene to play, out of a sudden life becomes easy. And out of a sudden you belong to a group, even though it's just for a couple of weeks. And I think quite a lot of people at film sets are, you know, lost souls, and they're happy to be with one another and create those stories together.
The other interesting, or another very interesting aspect of the movie to me was this relationship that develops between yourself as Alexei and the character of Jomo, who's this freedom fighter essentially in Nigeria, and he's fighting in the Niger Delta against the exploitation of his homeland. There's an incredible physicality in what we see from him as well, not just in the soldierly fighting, but in this wonderful dance that he performs, a kind of ritual with his sister that we see happening late at night in their village. That must have been a very exciting, because you watch this, I guess, as the character of Alexei, you're aware of this kind of ritualistic and physical activity going on in the background when you come there.
Yes, also, you know, in preparation for the movie, that's how we got to know each other. We were in dance rehearsals every day for a couple of hours, just, you know, sweating and trying to memorize those steps and periods. And you know, as you all know, it looks pretty silly when you try to dance, but you don't know how. And it's a great way to get to know each other, because when you act, you often think, okay, how am I going to be powerful? How am I going to be truthful? And you have all those intimidating words for how you want to come across. And then to just, you know, stumble across each other's feet and make a fool out of yourself in a dance rehearsal is a pretty good way to get to know each other.
Well, it sounds like a really wonderful way to bring two lost souls together. They don't have to speak to each other using words, where all sorts of confusions can arise. A physical interaction like that, I suppose, can say much more and be much more open to having many layers of meanings rather than a simple sentence.
Yes. I think what I find particularly interesting is that in the beginning, we are spoiling again, but it doesn't matter. Let's spoil a little bit. So there are, let's say, three segments in this movie. And in the beginning, you start this journey with one character, and then out of a sudden you're in another world and you experience another lead performer, let's say. And you as an audience, you don't know who is going to lead this film, whose shoulders are going to carry the weight of this story. And out of a sudden, these two potential, let's say, lead figures, they clash and they meet and something very unexpected happens. Also unexpected in terms of how to create a narrative in a film. And Yeah, I don't want to spoil more.
Yeah, no, don't go any further.
How the film is structured.
Yeah, go any further than that, because I think the joy is in seeing how these two characters, who are essentially enemies, how they find their peace with each other, let me put it that way. But I wondered about that idea. You know, obviously Giacomo Abruzzese, who directed this film, had a way of bringing the lost souls of this cast together. Was it a very different type of way, or a very different type of experience on your more recent experience with Andrea Arnold, and indeed our own Barry Keoghan, a man who's an expert at giving us lost souls on screen? Was that a very different experience on board working with them from working on this film?
Well, I mean, Barry is one of a kind. He's always on the edge, you know, and that's what we love him for, but that's also what he's, you know, struggling with. He's an existential artist. And I think every set needs those people, but also it needs people around them that, you know, order the mess and structure the chaos and create some kind of schedule. So in our case, in Disco Boy's case, this is a first feature. So what you're seeing on screen is a director's work that he has been fighting for around 8 years. He had to talk to thousands of producers to find the money that he needed to make this movie. And that comes with a lot of sacrifices from everyone. So everybody involved in this project had to literally go through pain, through sleepless nights, you can't imagine the amount of sacrifice that all the crew has put into this project. And, you know, it leads to all kinds of experiences, from broken bones to, you know, delightful material on screen. And I think that is, to a certain extent, something that sets this production apart from the ones that you've mentioned. Andrea Arnold, you know, she's a very experienced master of her craft. She's an incredible director that has gone to Cannes many times, that is well-rounded. I mean, every time she takes a huge risk, and I can tell because I've been with her last year, we shot a movie together, it's incredible how much risk she's willing to take, even though she could get everything, you know. She could get the biggest production. She could work with all the stars in the world because everybody wants to work with her. She is, like, almost, like, on purpose, trying to recreate first feature conditions to a certain extent to keep it alive and to keep it fresh and existential. But in our case, in Disco Boy's case, this is really a first feature of someone that is still discovering his own language.
Well, I think he probably has lots more to share with us when that language becomes clearer and clearer, clear as it is in this film. Franz, thanks so much for speaking with us this evening and congratulations on the film.
Thank you so much for all these great questions and have a wonderful evening.
Certainly will. On the basis of that conversation, I'll have a better one. Franz Rakowski there. Disco Boy is the film that he was speaking about. It opens this Friday at the Lighthouse Cinema. Ever since she released her first single with Clara Records last July, Niamh Berry has been hailed as one of Irish folk's most exciting new talents. This is at a time when the genre is getting so much attention with artists like Lancome, Lisa O'Neill and Ye Vagabonds on the scene. That is quite an accolade indeed. This Friday, Niamh's debut album, Yellow Roses, will be released on Clara Records. She will then embark on a national Irish tour. In May, she will perform at the Tradition Now Festival in the National Concert Hall in celebration of trad and folk music, and delighted to have Niamh and her several instruments, in fact, with me in studio on this Wednesday evening. This is a debut album and it's been released by Clara. I think you were kind of nearly ready to go with it yourself, in fact, Niamh, and then Clara came along and said, do you want us to do this for you?
Yes, yeah.
Exciting a moment was that?
Yeah, really exciting. Yeah, I suppose I hadn't really released music myself before, so I was totally game for just doing it myself, whacking it out. But they got in touch and they really liked the album. It was totally finished by the time they got in touch. So it wasn't, I didn't have much to think about.
No, and I suppose then you could concentrate on the songs and getting them the way you wanted them to be. You probably were pretty much there if you had ready to go with it yourself. But you could put maybe that extra little bit of polish that a that a record company can help you to put on
it. Yeah, no, they've been great. So.
Nah, right. Well, listen, we're going to listen to a couple of songs. I have the first of which is Bite the Bridle. This is the new single. I think this might be the first time we're going to hear this, is it, near enough?
Yes, it's very exclusive.
Exclusive arena. Now, I love the story behind where this song came from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wrote the song a few years ago. I encountered a horse in Temple Bar. And
the way you do.
Yeah, she was a horse with a carriage, and she was looking a bit worse for wear, and she wouldn't go for the driver, but she started stomping her hooves and sparks started flying up on the cobblestones, and it was just a really visceral image, and I had to write a song about it. So,
We're going to hear both banjo. I think we have a bit of harmonium down here. Is there a little foot harmonium that you have down there, is there as well?
Yes, okay. Sneaky harmonium.
Right, okay, let's hear. This is then Bite the Bridle, new single from Niamh Berry.
Everyone knows she don't belong here. Everyone knows it's her turn.
Goes the horse, clip-clopping off across those cobblestones. Bite the Bridle, the title of the new single there from Niamh Berry, performing live for us in studio this evening. Do you have to do that as a singer and as a musician? Bite the bridle with your teeth, dear, and go whatever direction, to use your own lyric, not me addressing you that way, and go whatever direction it takes you. I guess that's part of what the metaphor is there.
I guess so, yeah. It's just about, shaking off whatever holds you back and... being free.
Yeah, it certainly gives me a sense of that. Your background, because it's interesting. I love when the harmonium comes in, it brings in a whole new kind of sound within it there. Your mother gives you the classical side of things. Your father gives you the folk side of things.
Yeah. I come from a pretty musical family, but they all do music slightly differently. Mm. So, yeah, I grew up with my mum playing like Chopin and Rachmaninoff in the house, and my dad playing... like Van Morrison and Christy Moore. I think it's a nice balance to have.
And did you pursue either or both at the same time?
I never really got into classical music that much, although I was always taken to concerts and stuff, and I appreciate that from my mom's side.
And of course, it'll be great to be able to say to your mom, come along to the National Concert Hall, where's the concert you would have gone to for classical music, I guess. She'll be there on May the 4th, I'm guessing, cheering
I'm
you
guessing
along.
I'm guessing she will, yeah.
What's involved in that particular concert, by the way? Is it Trad Night, is it?
Yeah, Tradition Now is a festival the first weekend of May, in the concert hall. So there's great acts. I think John Flynn is the same.
John Francis Flynn is there as well.
Same night as me. So,
Good place to be for sure. In terms of heading out on the tour, then, is it just you and your several instruments, or will there be others with you?
I'm going to do some of the shows solo with my several instruments. some of the shows I'll have a guitarist, Joe Potter, with me, and the show in Whelan's on the 28th of April, I'll have a full band with me. So it will be double bass, cello, keys. And possibly some harp as well.
Right, because we do get not all of the songs on the album are some of them arranged out for that bigger ensemble as well.
Yes.
Anyway, I better let you bend away from the microphone briefly to get your guitar, because that's what you're going to play for this one. I watched the video for this the other day. I was just getting ready to speak with you this evening. The song's called Budapest, and it has this young woman lying in a bed, kind of going through some old photographs. She's calling herself all the time. She seems to be trying to get herself to come over and have a chat with herself. There's a bit of the split personality thing going on here, is there?
Yeah, it was a great video made for this song by Elias Grace. I think he kind of took the story and took a few of my notes and went with it. But it's really lovely. So I recommend people watch
have a look
as well.
At it. Well, I recommend they listen to the song now as well. Let's listen to Budapest.
Basket and send me a let the mothers hold me when I cry and shiver. I'm packaged and toasted, I'm ready to be delivered.
Budapest, the title of the song, and that is from Niamh Berry's debut album Yellow Roses, which will be launched this Friday on Claddagh Records label. She'll be playing Whelan's on April the 28th. National tour kicks off next month. Belfast, Dublin, Galway, Limerick, Kilkenny and Cork. May the 4th then, she's part of the Tradition Now Festival at the National Concert Hall. Full details of all of the dates for the tour can be found on niamhberry.com and nch.ie, obviously, for the Tradition Now Festival. But that is our lot for this Wednesday evening. Paula Shields and Alfred Smartest researched. David Phelan was the broadcast coordinator. Gar Duffy was on sound this evening, and tonight's programme produced by Kay Sheehy. Talk to you tomorrow night, 7 o'clock here on RT Radio 1. John Creedon will be with you after the news.